This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to be joined by Mike Bacchus of CanesTime.com talking the rivalry game, Florida State-Miami, in Miami on Saturday. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So let's get right to it. This obviously is a game where Florida State has had they've been tested a good bit this year so far, as opposed to last year. You know, last year they ran through basically everyone on their schedule in the regular season, and oddly were criticized for that. And now this year it's the opposite. They've not been anywhere close to the same team that they were last year in terms of blowing people out. Out of the stadium in these games, and now they're being criticized for winning close. So we come into this game, and the point spread, as far as I saw, is about 3, 2.5 or so, and it got down as far as Florida State only being favored by 1. So this is a game that the odds makers expect to be very competitive, and really, given the way that Florida State is a public team at this point, off their success last year, this is probably an indication that a lot of odds makers expect Miami to win this game. Is that surprising to you as someone who comes from, who's covered Miami all year, or is this something that you agree with, that you think is a legitimate possibility in this game?
No, I was absolutely shocked when I saw that earlier this week. You know, Miami's been two different teams this year, and the expectation. I mean, the teams that beat them, Georgia Tech beat them, Louisville beat them, Nebraska beat them. Those are basically the three best teams that Miami has played this year, and those are three solid football teams, but they're not Florida State, and so that line really surprised me and a lot of fans earlier this week when it came out.
So one thing that I will say is, certainly as far as I can tell, in Miami's favor coming into this game, is that obviously Miami has had a bye week to get healthy, to obviously put in some extra wrinkles, that sort of thing, over the course of the last week, while Florida State had to play a pretty physical game against a good Virginia front seven. And a decent Virginia offensive line. Florida State's been banged up all season. What's Miami's health situation coming into this game?
You know, that was a really good time for a bye week last week for Miami. In fact, they actually didn't even practice the first 4 days of last week. Al Golden just kept saying that he wanted his team to get healthy. You know, they had some academic stuff that they wanted to make sure was taken care of. And, you know, the biggest thing, Eric Flowers, their starting left tackle. I mean, Eric's probably going to be their highest draft pick next year. And he's been the fixture at left tackle. He's one of the best players on their entire football team. And if this game had been played last week, Eric would not have played. You know, he had a minor knee injury. It kept him out of the North Carolina game a couple weeks ago. And
torn meniscus,
he's actually
right?
been practicing. Yeah, well, it was something along those lines. They actually never really fully confirmed exactly what it was. But, he's back. I mean, he practiced the last couple of days. And, in fact, just a few hours ago, the university released their injury report for Saturday. And Eric is listed as probable. And, all expectations are that he will start at left tackle for Miami. So that's a huge just him alone, getting him back during that, after a bye week is huge. You know, and there were a few other kids that were dinged up that are back. So the timing for the bye week last week was really good for Miami. As far as putting in new wrinkles offensively, defensively, whatever, you just never know. I mean, maybe, some new wrinkles were put in for this game. But the bottom line is, in order for Miami to have a chance, They have to be able to run the football, and they've been doing a really good job of that lately. So I think more so than the new wrinkles and things like that, I think the bye week really helped Miami from an injury standpoint.
Yeah, and that typically, especially with late-year bye weeks, is really what does give teams an advantage, and in particular on home bye weeks, because then you get still an extra day of recuperation and the ability to still get that extra day of practice during the week. So that's something that I think a lot of fans don't realize, is that by mid-season, really by the end of the first month, every team in the country is banged up and most of their players are hurt in some way, shape, or form and are playing through something. And so those bye weeks really matter at this point in the season. And I think that's something that people are certainly considering. The odds makers were certainly considering when they set Miami when they set that line so close. I actually wasn't that surprised by the line. I expected it to be around four for what it's worth, but that's mostly because I've looked at how Miami's played the last few weeks, and you look at four of the last five weeks, they've played very good football. I mean, they beat what I think is a pretty good Duke team, and they really hammered Duke. They struggled against Georgia Tech, but I throw games against Georgia Tech out because of that offense, and it's just different from playing anybody else. And then you look at the offensive performance against Cincinnati, not a good defensive team, but still. Against Virginia Tech, had some injuries up front, but it's Virginia Tech on defense. It's still any time you run for 6.87 yards per carry and 364 yards on a Bud Foster defense, you're doing something right. And then North Carolina can't stop anybody. I'm pretty sure Booker T. Washington fields as good a defense as Miami right now, as North Carolina right now. So we can throw that one out. But that Virginia Tech game was pretty telling to me about how well Miami's running the football. And can you talk a little bit about how Miami matches up front on the offensive line and what they're doing? I mean, obviously Duke Johnson is a terrific player. But he's not the only one. I mean, you look at this, it's also Gus Edwards. It's also Joe Yearby. They're getting rushing yards from more than just Johnson. They're getting production from more than just Duke. So what's Miami doing that has made them so successful in the running game over the last few weeks, and how does that project to match up against Florida State this weekend?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the play of the offensive line. I mean, they had a few new starters at the beginning of the season. They had a brand new right tackle. They had a brand new right guard. And they really, over the course of the season, have shuffled guys in and out of that left guard spot. So they, their offensive line lacked cohesiveness early in the season. And you could tell teams early on, Louisville did it, Nebraska did it, teams were stacking the line of scrimmage and really challenging Brad Kaya, being a true freshman, to beat him. And unfortunately for Miami, he wasn't able to do that. He wasn't at that level yet. He was, they were trying to protect him in a lot of ways, and rightfully so. But the last few weeks, Miami's offensive line, which amazingly, it's shuffled around. But their offensive line over the last month of the season has been playing lights out. And, Duke Johnson is Duke Johnson. Early in the season, Joseph Yearby, a true freshman, he barely touched the ball. I don't think he even had a carry against Louisville. He had one touch. So early in the season, he wasn't real heavily involved against Nebraska. Being a true freshman, I think the coaches were hesitant to put him in the game and trust him in key situations.
Yeah, especially in pass protection, that's always an issue. That's always an issue for young players, is in pass protection. And with a young freshman quarterback, the last thing you want to do is get him killed. So, I mean, that certainly would account for less playing time. But I thought Yearby, coming out of high school, he was a high school teammate, obviously, of Florida State freshman Cook, Dalvin Cook. I thought Yearby was the most natural running back in the state of Florida last year. Sony Michel may have been the best, running back and, you know, overall complete package in the state. But I thought Yearby was the most natural runner in the state of Florida last year coming out of high school. And I think he's certainly running like that right now.
He's got outstanding vision. He's a, like you said, he's a natural runner. He's got a very good feel for the running game. He's a naturally gifted pass catcher. The one thing, well, there's, you know, he's not the biggest kid in the world, but the one thing that he does lack, though, is the ability to hit the home run. He just simply does not have that home run hitting speed. So, you know, he'll carve up, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards here and there. He'll be involved in the passing game. His pass protection has improved tremendously since the beginning of the season. So these last few weeks, Joseph Yearby's presence in both the running game and the passing game has played a big role in Miami's success. And, you know, early on, it was Duke Johnson. You know, Gus Edwards was struggling in his short yardage, you know, role. Joseph Yearby wasn't ready yet. So these last few weeks, Gus has started, you know, has started to settle in that role. Yearby has started to settle in. So those guys are taking a big, you know, they're taking a lot of weight off Duke's shoulders. And Duke has really stayed fresh these last few weeks. So, you know, when you put three of those kids together back there, with the way the offensive line has been playing, they're running the football really well these last few weeks. Now, having said that, Jason, it's a whole different ballgame this week. It is a whole different ballgame. I mean, as good as Virginia Tech may have been on defense, you know, it's not even close. Florida State's the biggest defensive front Miami will face all season. It's a whole different ballgame. So this game, this offensive line will be tested tremendously this weekend. And I think that is probably one of the reasons why a lot of Miami fans are wondering, can Miami continue to run the football this well? It's going to be a huge test for them.
Yeah, and you know, this is the funny thing is that Florida State fans are looking at this game and going, can we stop the run? Because Florida State has not stopped the run on defense as well, certainly not as well as they did last year. And there's been some times this year, you know, the first half, particularly the second quarter against Louisville, and you know, at other points, but that, you know, being the most recent example, where you're watching this defensive front for Florida State just get gashed. Now against Louisville, they were actually missing 7 scholarship linebackers, so you know that's changed a little bit as they've gotten a little bit healthier. But this Florida State front has struggled to stop the run a little bit, and so you know I think that's maybe the most intriguing matchup, at least on this side of the ball. It's the most intriguing matchup. It may be the most intriguing matchup of this game because I think Florida State has 2 defensive linemen in Mario Edwards Jr. And, of course, Flowers being back at that left spot, at that left tackle spot, that he's going to typically line up across from Mario Edwards Jr. unless Florida State moves Edwards around a little bit, which they've done. But he's typically going to be responsible for Edwards. Having him back is huge because Edwards is obviously such a dominant presence. You want an offensive lineman of that caliber to be able to handle him. But then you also have the guy who's actually played better and been more consistent than Edwards all year, and that's Eddie Goldman at the defensive tackle spot. And those two guys are really the bell cows of what Florida State offers up front. And they've got some holes elsewhere. So the real question is, can Miami adequately block those two to keep them from disrupting the running game well enough to be able to take advantage of some of the holes elsewhere? You know, when Florida State puts a backup defensive tackle in the game, they've gotten gashed. They've got some youth elsewhere. You know, the defensive end opposite Mario Edwards has been a problem all season. Florida State is not getting physical play. They're not getting consistency from that spot, and they've had some trouble setting the edge. So this is where, you know, when those two guys are playing at their highest level, they've been almost unblockable, but it's only two guys. And so to me, the question is, can Miami scheme or find ways to get those guys out, you know, to neutralize the impact of those two playmakers so that they can take advantage of some of the other spots in the Florida State front? That's something I'm curious to see. And I do think Florida State is going to force Brad Kaya to prove that he can beat that secondary rather than just let Miami run the football down the field. So, you know, that's another thing in itself.
Absolutely, I agree. And that's really what a lot of Miami fans are expecting Florida State to do this week is exactly what Louisville, Nebraska, Georgia Tech, and teams like that did is, you know, put, you know, bring the extra guy down, walk him up to the line of scrimmage and really say, hey, you know what? You're a true freshman. You're against the defense in a game where he's not used to playing in. But granted, it will be a home game for him, but I'd be really surprised if that was not the defensive game plan for Florida State this week. And like you said, I mean, those two defensive linemen are tremendous. They're as good as anybody Miami will face this season. Having Flowers back, if he does indeed play and start the game, which he's now expected to do, would be huge because he can help neutralize, Mario Edwards on the outside. Now, on the inside, Eddie Goldman, that's going to be interesting because even if Flowers does play, Miami will likely start a true freshman at left guard named Nick Linder. He's held up pretty well over the last few weeks. But again, the guys that are coming to the town this week are on a whole different level, especially, like you said, Eddie Goldman inside. So it should be fun to watch, and that is absolutely, to me, not only the biggest key on offense for Miami, but the biggest key of the game, because if Miami cannot effectively run the football, it's going to be a long night because they're not going to be able to sustain drives. They're not going to be able to keep Florida State's offense off the field. And part of the turnaround has been for Miami offensively has been third downs. Early in the season, they weren't running the ball as well. They were forced in a lot of third long situations, and they were terrible. At one point, going into the Virginia Tech game, I think they were 118th in the country on converting third downs. The last few weeks, they've been able to run the ball a lot better, and their third down, their third down conversions have gone way up because they're, instead of third and six, third and eight, they're facing a lot more third and two, third and three type situations. So
yeah,
thing that I'm going to watch real closely.
I'm looking at the stats right now, and they were 1 of 13 on third down against Louisville. That's just under 8% conversion percentage. They're only 2 of 10 against Florida A&M. A little bit better against Arkansas State, 40% actually against Nebraska, then 15% against Duke, but then you start to see it climb, 20% against Georgia Tech, then 30% against Cincinnati, and then 46% against both Virginia Tech and North Carolina. And that's a testament, like you said, they're getting into better down and distance scenarios in those, and they're able to run for a lot of those. The other thing that they've been able to do, from what I've seen on tape and from what I've seen statistically, Miami, because they've been able to run the ball better of late, one thing Kaya can really do is he can push the ball downfield. And, with the receivers that Miami has, when you've got a Philip Dorsett who can run by just about anybody in the country, and when you've got a Stacy Coley who, even though he hasn't had a great year, certainly can run, there's no doubting Coley's talent. Miami's going to want to, probably test Florida State deep on play action, because Florida State has shown, again, the first play of the Louisville game and several others, Florida State has shown a propensity to get beat over top a little bit and, get caught peeking a little bit this year, even though they've got such a good secondary. I'm not sure how much that's going to happen against Miami, because I expect them to go a little bit more man-free, maybe bring a guy down, and that's a little less likely to have a bust in that kind of scenario. But with a kid that throws it as well down the field, on those bucket throws and, the post routes and that sort of thing as Kaya, you give your guy a chance, and you hit one or two of those and suddenly the game's very different. So again, that's all predicated on running it well enough to be able to do that. And one thing I've got to give James Coley, the offensive coordinator, some credit for is they've thrown it a good bit on first down the last few weeks. As they've started running it better, they've actually thrown it more on first down, on play action, going down the field, and that's made it easier on Kai, as far as I can tell.
Absolutely. The balance has been really well the last few weeks, and that's been a big part of the reason why their third down conversions have gone up, too. And, you mentioned the Miami's outside receivers, and Philip Dorsett is clearly their top guy right now, and unfortunately for Miami in the passing game, he's somewhat one-dimensional. He has that. Everybody talks about Phillip's ability to just run past defenders, and he can do that. He can absolutely do that as good as anybody in the country, but he is a little bit one-dimensional. Now, the one kid that you did not mention who has played a huge role all season, especially these last few weeks on third down, is Clyde Walford, the tight end over the middle. He's 6'5". You know, he's athletic.
He's a big boy.
He's a big dude, and especially in the end zone. I mean, he is a big target, and he just has a natural feel for the passing game and just the ability to get open and position his body really well. So that's a kid that will play a big, big part of Miami's offense this week. And that's, one kid that really has not been talked about a whole lot when I've been reading and hearing about this game. But remember the tight end, 46 Clyde Walford. He could play a big role on Saturday.
Yeah, and Florida State fans are certainly a little twitchy about Miami tight ends, given the history in this matchup. So that's another thing altogether. Now let's switch gears. Let's move then to the other side of the football, and this is a side where Florida State's pretty much got an advantage on just about anybody they face, mainly because they're fielding one of the most transcendent offensive players in recent memory in Winston, but. The interesting thing is Winston actually did struggle against Miami in the first half last year, and I expect to see more or less the same basic scheme from Miami defensively that they brought out last year, which is basically play an umbrella where you're not going to let anything go deep. You're not going to let Winston beat you downfield, throw it over the top, and get anything easy. You're going to force everything underneath, force him to throw down to the backs, be patient, force him, try to bait him into throwing into coverage a little bit and maybe getting greedy, and then hit the receivers and try to make tackles and force Florida State to be efficient. They'll be happy, I'm guessing, to give up your 8 or 10 yard pass play as long as they're not giving up 40 or 50. And given that, and given Winston's propensity to want to force it into coverage at times, he's thrown 6 interceptions in the last 2 games, 6 interceptions in the last 3 games. This is an intriguing matchup for me because, again, with what Miami likes to do with playing off like that, forcing the offense to be efficient. The interesting thing to me is whether Winston's going to be patient enough for Florida State to be consistently efficient. Now, I'm guessing you're seeing the same thing in terms of what to expect from Miami defensively there.
Absolutely. It's interesting, though, Jason, because that umbrella-style defense, keep everything in front of you, don't get beat deep. Miami drew a lot, Miami's defensive coaches, especially defensive coordinator Mark D'Onofrio, drew a lot of critics, including from a lot of former players, things like that, for that style of defense when his run defense was just absolutely gashed against Nebraska and Georgia Tech. A lot of people, former players, fans, a lot of people really wanted to see Miami take more advantage of how talented their corners are. I mean, Miami, they're very, very good on the outside. I mean, they got 4 guys that can line up against just about anybody. And, there's been times this season, especially early on, that, he kind of took that, he just didn't give them a chance. And these last few weeks, I think a lot of it had to do with the opponents, the fear of not being able to get beat deep. But these last few weeks, it's been a whole different ballgame. I mean, their corners are up. They're giving their corners a chance to reroute receivers, and it's causing problems on the opposing quarterbacks. Now, Jameis Winston, whole different ballgame. I mean, Miami has not faced a Rashad Greene the last few weeks. They've obviously not faced a Jameis Winston. So it'll be very interesting to see what Miami does defensively, in this game, because I think it's clear that Florida State offensively is a much better passing offense than they are running the football. So it'll be interesting to see whether Miami goes back to that umbrella style defense or if they stick to what they've been doing the last few weeks, bringing the safety down, bringing the corners up, giving a chance to get more physical, play more press coverage, and give it a chance to reroute receivers. So that's a lot of people are really wondering what's going to happen, and obviously we'll find out Saturday night, but that's going to be a big key.
Yeah,
because Miami's corners can play. I mean, it's just a matter of whether the coaches trust their ability to keep everything in front of them.
Yeah, and that's really the question. I mean, with the way that Florida State has actually not run the football all that effectively this year, although I was surprised when I checked Football Outsiders' S&P Plus ratings earlier today and discovered that Florida State's rush offense is now actually up to eighth in the country in terms of efficiency. I was surprised by that in terms of opponent-adjusted efficiency. I was surprised by that because to the eyeball, you know, to the eye test, which you keep hearing people talk about, you know, on ESPN and all these other places, by the eye test, Florida State hasn't run the football all that well this year. But all of a sudden, it does look like they're getting more efficient in the running game. And there may be some changes up front this week. Jimbo Fisher was a little bit coy when he was asked about it after practice today, because Florida State has had, in the open part of practice, they've had left tackle Cam Irving has taken all the snaps at first team center. And then previous starter, who's been hurt but returned to practice this week, Austin Barron, has been taking all the reps at second team center. And the guy who started the last four games at center, Ryan Hofeld, has not taken any snaps at center. And center has been a big problem for Florida State so far this year. They've had to scheme around basically their centers getting run over and whiffing and, you know, Olay blocking a good bit over the course of the year. And Barron was just starting to hit his stride a little bit around the Wake Forest game. You know, it was the best he'd played all year against. Actually, Wake Forest has a decent defense. They just have the worst offense of any Power Five team. But then he broke his arm. And now it's not clear what they're going to have on the offensive line this week. They may actually start a freshman at left tackle and then move their All-America candidate from Cam Irving from left tackle to center. Now, he hasn't played like an All-American most of this year, although he's been better again in the second portion of the year than he was in the first. But if he moves to center, it's a very different look from what Florida State has. And you don't know how they're going to run the football in this game because of it, because of how there still continues to be moving parts up front. Given that, Florida State is pretty comfortable facing good defensive ends. You know, they got a senior right tackle in Bobby Hart. They're going to have either Irving or freshman Rod Johnson in that left tackle position. And both of those guys can handle their business at left tackle. They can both pass block. But they've had a lot of trouble at that center position and having some leaks in terms of penetration in the middle. How does Miami match up at that defensive tackle spot? That is the spot I think that Florida State fans are interested in about every team that they play against, is how good are their defensive tackles? How quick are they, especially? Because Florida State has struggled a little bit against quickness on the interior. How does Miami match up there?
Well, their defensive tackle, Olson Pierre, is very good. I mean, he's an athletic kid. He's an explosive kid. And he's played well. He started the last few years. He's a very steady performer. The problem they've had the last couple of years has been at the nose. And at the beginning, they really did a nice job during the offseason of trying to address that need. And in fact, They were really using three first-time guys there early in the season. Calvin Hurdalu was a JC transfer who came in the spring. Mike Weiss was a JC transfer who came in the summer. And Cortell Jenkins was a high school kid that came in the summer. So they're using those three guys and have been since the beginning of the season. Now, the problem early on was those guys were all first-year guys, and even though two of them were JC kids, they weren't ready. They were not ready for big time college football, and you know, and it showed. I mean, Miami got pushed around a little bit, especially early in the season. And it wasn't any more apparent than when they went out against Nebraska. So, but these last few weeks, these kids are starting to get their feet under them. They're starting to get a little more experience. They're starting to get a little more confident. They're starting to get more comfortable in that system, and their play at the nose between those three kids the last few weeks has gotten much, much better. So, you know, you say, how does Miami match up inside? You know, if this game would have been played a month ago, I would say Florida State, despite all their issues, still would have a big advantage. But these last few weeks, these kids at the nose tackle position, all three of them, made Miami's defense a whole lot better. So to me, that's going to be a big, big key Saturday night, is how well these three kids play for Miami.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's no surprise from the Florida State side, because from my perspective, the game really does boil down to, can Miami run the football on first down particularly, and how well are they going to be able to take advantage of Florida State's weakness on the interior of the offensive line? If they win those two matchups, I think they win the football game. If they lose both of those matchups, I think Florida State may blow them out. If they split them, now it's going to be very, very interesting. So, you know, I think this is a game where, honestly, the point spread is not far off from how close these two teams could be, especially if Winston turns it over like he has been of late. It could be a very, very interesting game on Saturday night. And of course, you know, the with the history between Florida State and Miami, what else would you expect between these two teams? And actually, by the way, you know, Miami, in my opinion, just to get this out there, one before we wrap, Miami right now, along with Duke, is one of the two most, you know, Florida State fans are complaining about being disrespected, being moved down to third, despite being undefeated and all of this. I think the most disrespected teams in the country right now are Duke and Miami. Because Miami, if you look at the metrics, if you look at some of this stuff, Football Outsiders F+ ratings, Miami's, I think, 14th. And they're not even in the rankings right now for the college football playoff. Duke is playing at a very high level, and people don't realize it because of the name on the jersey. So it's really interesting to me right now to see how a couple of these ACC teams, really all three of those teams that I just named, are not getting the respect for how well they've played. And frankly, Miami should have beaten Nebraska from what I saw during that game. So this is to me a very dangerous game for Florida State. I'm very curious to see how this ends up front. I think this is going to be one of the more interesting games from a scheme perspective and from a matchup perspective all year, and I think that's nationwide, not just from the perspective of these two programs.
Absolutely, you talked about, I'd like to mention two things about this game in closing. For Miami, the bottom line is Miami lost three games early in the season. None of those teams have what Florida State has. From a Miami perspective, that is a concern. The second part, though, is this is Florida State. This is a whole different ball game to those kids. I mean, you look at all the kids that from South Florida on FSU's roster. These kids all know each other, and they used to have the saying where you can throw all the records and all the statistics and all that out the window when these two get together. You know, and last year, you know, the last couple of years, maybe the talent level between the two teams was too great to really throw it out. This year,
it's starting to narrow.
You're starting to narrow a little bit, especially with Florida State's injuries and how well Miami's freshman quarterback has been playing. But my point on that is it's a whole different ballgame. When Miami's kids, when those kids wake up on Saturday, it's not Nebraska. They're not getting ready to play Georgia Tech. They're getting ready to play Florida State. And so I think that's going to be a big, big factor for Miami is, you know, how motivated these kids are going to be. So to me, that's going to play a big role. Brad Kaya, never been in a situation like this, playing an elite team like this. So there's a lot of factors that are going to go into it. You mentioned a couple of them, running the ball on first down, defending the run on first down, avoiding negative situations on money downs. There's a lot to look forward to, but I'm excited. This is probably the most excited that these two teams have been, the fan bases have been the last few years for this game.
Yeah, it's the reason that these players go to these schools is to play in this game and this kind of atmosphere and this kind of game. So I'm very much looking forward to it. So quickly, before we finish, gun to your head, what happens on Saturday night?
I think Miami comes out ready to play. I think Brad Kaya, they do a nice job with protecting Kaya. I think Miami will run the football, but not quite as well as a lot of people think. I still think Florida State at the end of the day is so darn talented in there. You know, been there, done that. I think it's a close game until the, you know, until the fourth quarter. I really think Florida State wins it by 10 or 14 points in the end.
Yeah, we're very much along the same lines. I expect Miami actually to come out, you know, gun to my head, I expect Miami to come out and go up maybe 10 points early, and Florida State to ultimately do what they've been doing and just eventually come back a little bit, and you know, win close. I think it's going to be a ball game well into the fourth quarter, but I cannot find myself picking against Jameis Winston unless you've got a major talent edge on the other side of the field. The guy just doesn't lose football games, and I think that ends up being the difference with an experienced quarterback across the field from a guy that is a true freshman. And I think that's going to be ultimately that's the place where the game, even though that's not one of the keys that we were just talking about, I think that actually ends up being the primary difference in the reason that Florida State wins, even though Winston is really banged up coming into this game. So it's going to be interesting. But Mike, thanks for joining us. This has been a real pleasure.
Hey, Jason, I appreciate you having me, and enjoy the game on Saturday night.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay, that'll do it for us today on the Unconquered podcast. Thanks again to Mike Bacchus from CanesTime.com. On behalf of the rest of the Noll Digest crew, this is Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you again soon. I made this.